You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is... Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I am super excited to have Jessica Berry back on the show with me today. She has a brand new book. It's called Don't Turn Around. And if you loved Free Fall like I did, this book will do to you what Free Fall did times 10. I hope you don't need any sleep. I hope everybody's caught up on all the sleep that they need from being stuck at home with COVID, because when you read this book, you're going to need it. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thanks so much for having me back. It's a real pleasure.
Absolutely. So last year, Free Fall came out, or maybe it's been 2 years ago. How long has it been? It's been about a year and a half, hasn't it?
Yeah, year and a half.
So what's been going on? But, between then and now, Free Fall was your debut book, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
And just really took readers by storm, this really fresh voice out there. How has that felt, promoting that book and all of the good stuff that goes along with that?
Yeah, it's been so exciting. And it's actually coincided with quite a lot of big life changes generally. So after the book came out, I had been living in London for 15 years, and my husband and I decided to, I'm originally from Massachusetts, so we decided to move back to New England. So we're living in Maine now, which is quite a big change. And it meant that I was able to give up my full-time job. So it feels like over the past year and a half, I feel like I am officially a full-time writer, which has been a really interesting and largely great transition. So that's been a big adjustment, is just suddenly having all of this time to write. It's been it's been a pleasure and also a pain, as writing always is.
Well, I would love to know, because it's always fascinating to me how place informs the stories that come out of us, and how our surroundings have a way of creeping in and changing us as people, and then those things kind of seep into the writing. But you've been kind of in the midst of moving while writing, I assume, or at least revising.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel like your place, your surroundings, have influenced your writing or editing or whatever part that you've been in?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I hadn't lived in America for such a long time. And England, has a lot of, wide open green spaces, but the scale of it is so much smaller than the US. And coming back here, we're in Portland, which is a city, but the area around us, Maine, is a huge, huge state. And just being back in a place where, to drive the length of this state takes 10 hours, and to drive the entire length of the United Kingdom takes 10 hours. So adjusting to that concept of space has been interesting. And I think that's why, looking back on it, Free Fall was very much rooted in this expanse of the Colorado Rockies and this kind of vastness of the space. And Don't Turn Around is sort of similarly interested in the vastness of space, but it's a different space. It's the desert of New Mexico. And just that idea that I think America is just so unique, and that you can get this unending horizon in these places, and just this vastness of space. And so I think that's been something that has always really interested me, and being back here has really helped me to kind of further that and remember it.
Some friends of mine and I joke that if Bigfoot is real, he definitely lives in Oregon. there's something about those forests that are so dense and and just unending. I mean, literally miles and miles and hundreds of miles of just forest.
Yeah.
That, and you know, I'm from Mississippi, which is a very green state. But you know, Oregon, that's whole other level.
Yeah. It's just the scale of it. And like, I think the scale of everything here is extraordinary. I was in California. My brother and sister-in-law live in, off the coast of San Francisco, and we went to visit them before COVID made it impossible to visit anybody. And, we went out to, the redwood, like part of the redwood forest, and you just don't, it's impossible to explain to somebody who hasn't seen just how huge those trees are and just what it feels like to be in the midst of these giants. And I think that's what's so interesting about America, is that it is this kind of like the land of like giant landscape. You know, the scale of everything is just, it's like nothing else.
Yeah. Well, since you brought up COVID, I didn't want to broach that, but since you brought it up, you know, I talk to a lot of authors and I have a lot of author friends and, you know, there's groups on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, all the things that we do to waste time. There's something about the last 3 or 4 months that have been kind of crazy for people. And as writers, we're used to spending a lot of time alone. You know, the majority of our time is just us sitting in a room with our laptop and just, you know, playing with the characters in our head. That's just what we do. But there's something about being told that's what you have to do, and that kind of has gotten inside everybody's head. And
yeah.
I know a lot of people have really struggled over these last 3 or 4 months with finding their creativity and connecting with their imaginary characters. And maybe it's, you know, other family members are home with us, which, you know, can interrupt our schedules a little bit. Or maybe it's just the idea of this, you know, elusive pandemic that's out there somewhere, and maybe it's next door to us, whatever. But have you struggled with any of that, or do you know anyone who has? And if so, what are you doing about it?
Yeah, I definitely have. It's interesting because my husband and I joke that we were already socially isolated before all of this began,
too.
Because both of us, you know, I'm a writer, he works freelance, and we, you know, we just moved to this place. We haven't made a ton of friends. So we were like, oh, actually, like our lives theoretically haven't changed that much. Like we're already spending a huge amount of our time at home. You know, neither of us had offices to go to. I think that, so in theory, you're right, like it should have been like an easy adjustment. I think I've struggled with the fact that I usually, I had a routine of going to the library to write because I'm like very easily distracted apparently. So if I'm in my own home, I find that I'm like every 5 minutes getting up and like getting a snack or looking at the internet or playing with the cats. And the library was like, you know, you get there, I would think in my head, okay, I want to write 1,000 words. I would sit down and I would know that I couldn't leave the library until I had done that. And so I would do the work, you know, not super fast, but relatively quickly, because I knew that there was an endpoint. And I think the transition to being at home, and there's just no endpoints to anything. So it's meant that, you know, what would have taken me 3 hours is now somehow stretching to 6. And I feel, I think like a lot of people, a lot of guilt that I'm not getting more done. I think that there was a real thing where as soon as the lockdown happened, everybody felt this pressure to, okay, now is the time where I'm going to be super productive and I'm going to get all, you know, I have all this time and all this space. And I think that that wasn't taking into account the fact that like we're all under, you know, a lot of stress and some much more than others, but this is an unprecedented moment. And so I think that like the expectation of like now is the time when I will suddenly harness my creative powers, has not worked out quite like we were dreaming of. And I've definitely noticed that I oscillate between having days where I'm very productive and get a ton done, and then days where I just, my brain is not, it's just not showing up to the party for whatever reason. And I think that unconsciously, like, it's just trying to deal with the kind of strain of the, of these unprecedented events. It's interesting. Yeah. It's a weird time.
World Anvil is a browser-based world-building platform designed for all world builders, writers and novelists, dungeon masters, game developers, and everyone else. World Anvil keeps your world setting safe and organized, helps you find your characters, locations, plots, timelines, and maps quickly and easily as you write. Then, if you choose, you can showcase your amazing world building to the world, beautifully and interactively, to keep your readers engaged. You can even use our professional tier to build your career, selling access to behind-the-scenes content your readers will love, and growing your community. Build your world setting in any genre with over 25 custom-built world-building templates, complete with prompts to inspire your creativity. Allow your readers to explore the public parts of your world in an innovative new way with interactive maps, timelines, and wiki-style articles. Give special access to co-authors, beta readers, customers, or patrons to see exclusive behind-the-scenes content. There's a free version to get started with all of the major features. Guild membership offers you a host of extra options, including comprehensive privacy settings, co-authors, presentation options, and so much more. Join our community of over 800,000 world builders, including professional authors. Take part in competitions and learn more about world building at this fantastic online community. Use the coupon code HANK to get 20% off all 6 and 12 month subscriptions. WorldAnvil.com. I'm a recent convert and I know you will be too.
Netflix and Amazon Prime Video have been my downfall. I totally blame Tiger King on this, because when the lockdown first happened, we watched this stupid show and, you know, it infected my brain. I don't know what to tell you, but it was such a train wreck. Oh, it's awful. So I know, since this book is out now, Don't Turn Around, you had to have delivered this book, you know, months before the COVID, you know, lockdown happened. So what have you been working on this year?
So I have been writing a third book, but that has taken, and I can't blame this entirely on COVID, because I've been working on it since September, but it has been, it's been kind of a struggle. I feel like I'm finally now, over the past like month, I'm like, okay, I've got it. I've got the voice. I've got, you know, all of the elements have finally locked into place, but it's been a challenge. And I think that has been in part this transition from having a full-time job to not. And I think that, you know, it's amazing having all this this time in this space. But before, I, you know, went to work, would work until 6 p.m. and then would turn off my work stuff. And then I knew that I would have like, you know, an hour, 2 hours to write at my desk. And then I would have to go home because I was hungry and I wanted dinner. And so I think having those like a slightly more limited amount of time makes you more focused. Whereas this has, like, having all the time has meant that I've really, you know, I had a whole draft that I ended up shelving, and then I started something else and then realized that it was in the wrong, it was, you know, should have been first person and I had been written in third person. So there's been quite a lot of flailing. But I feel like I've finally got there, which is good, because there's some dark moments, some dark moments over the past few months. But now I feel like it's finally on track, and I'm actually really excited about it. Well, now,
when I saw that you were going to be back on the show, I, you know, started thinking. I remembered your previous book, Free Fall, and I pulled up your Amazon page to check out the new book and just, you know, kind of get back in Jessica Berry world. And the cover for Freefall has changed, and like dramatically changed.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know this book, but this doesn't look like the book that I know. And, you know, I looked over on my shelf and I dug around and found my copy of Freefall. And I like the new covers, but, you know, there's something about that original cover that conveys a certain tone or something. Mm. Do you feel like that original cover misrepresented the book, and now the ones now are a better representation? Or, you know, people are very picky about genre and the things that make up genre. How do you feel about, you know, that end of book selling, where, you know, the visual representation that, you know, a lot of times we have no real control over, or, you know, it's maybe not even what we're thinking about when we're writing, right? But, you know, when you get other people involved, you know, things kind of, you know, take on a life of their own. What do you think about that? And where do you come down on, you know, the selling of your book and how it's represented to the world?
Yeah, it's interesting. I absolutely loved the hardback cover for Freefall. I remember, you know, the first moment that they sent it to me, it was like straight away home run. I love it. It's incredible. I think that the pivot to the red cover for the paperback was, I think it's to make it look a little bit more commercial, which is totally fine with me. And I also think that what I realized was that when you saw the hardback on the shelf, there's something about the kind of like the matte dark blueness of the spine that meant with the silver lettering that made it kind of difficult to read the title. So it was one of those covers, I think, where the thumbnail of it is so beautiful and the actual package is really beautiful, but it doesn't like pop, I guess. And I think that like with the red cover for the paperback, I feel like it pops a little bit more. But it's weird with the cover thing, because you're right, like you don't really have much control over it. I've been lucky in that HarperCollins have sent through, you know, it was both actually for both the hardback and the paperback. It was like first time around, I was like, I love it. Great. You know, job done. But it is hard to, everybody has, you know, preconceived notions of the thing that they've produced and how it should be marketed and what it should look like. And I think that the thing that has helped me, and I've definitely like had arguments with publishers where I disagree with the cover, or I don't like it, or I don't like aspects of it. I think that because I worked in publishing before, and because I had this very specific job in publishing where I sold translation rights. So I would sell a book that had been written in English to a Spanish publisher, a German publisher, an Italian publisher, a French publisher. When that book is then published in those languages, you're going to get four insanely different covers. And yes, there is an element where you have to be like, okay, like my job is, in an ideal world, my job is to write the best book that I possibly can. And the publisher's job is to know their market and how to, you know, produce a package that appeals to that market. And so I'm kind of okay with leaving it to their hands mostly. Partly because I know I don't really have any control over it, and partly because I think that there is an element of like, you gotta trust them. You gotta trust that they know what they're doing and they're professionals and they've been doing it for a long time. And their goal is to get your book into as many hands as possible. And as a writer, that's my goal too. Like I want people to read my books. I want them to buy my books. I don't, and that means a lot more to me than having a package that looks like quote unquote literary or doesn't look genre. Yeah. So that's sort of my approach, I guess.
Well, that original cover, you know, when you see a photo of it, you can really tell all the nuance in it. And mm-hmm. it kind of looks like a cyber thriller, or maybe a techno thriller kind of, when you're looking at it. But then when you see a photo of the book, you can really tell there are the clouds there, and it looks like it's a mountain range, maybe. And and you can really pick up on the nuance that is the cover. And I think maybe that got lost on some people. I don't know. But when you're writing, because, you know, one thing that we hate to do as writers is think about genre and think about how we're going to sell this book. Where's it going to be in the store? If someone walks into a Barnes and Noble's, do they turn left or right? Will they find my book? Is it going to fit on this shelf or that shelf? And we don't want to worry about all that. We want to tell a story. But those are decisions that have to be thought out at some point in the process. Mm-hmm. So what point in the process do you start thinking about how this book is going to be presented, who this book is going to be for, and what things you can do to maybe help that process while holding on to your integrity as a writer?
I think that's a really good question. And it is sort of fine balance, I think. I think that for me, when I'm writing, like, I want to make sure that I'm writing something that is compelling, that has characters that readers are going to relate to, but that I'm also, you know, I think that, like, certainly for Free Fall, there was definitely, like, a message that I wanted to put through in terms of, like, the bond between mothers and daughters. And for Don't Turn Around, like, there's quite a lot of sort of political, not political, but, like, you know, kind of controversial, like, themes that I'm dealing with that are about female fear and women's rights and the incel movement and all these things. And I think that, like, the main thing is that if I know that there are things that I want to discuss as a writer and that I want to flesh out, I have to make sure that what I'm writing is still as entertaining as possible. Because at the end of the day, like, a book is it's an entertainment product. And we as writers are competing with Netflix and Amazon Prime and with all these things, and people have, like, less and less time, less and less free time, and less and less of, like, pie chart of attention, you know. How do I make sure that somebody who picks up my book feels like they're spending their time, their very precious time, in a way that is satisfying and entertaining? And I think that like, trying to work that out it's really hard. I think that I don't necessarily think that I always get it right, but I think that having your reader in mind and having your reader's enjoyment of the book in mind is sort of central. And I think that thrillers are interesting too, because I think that thrillers are, they can be really good vehicles to talk about things that you want to talk about as a writer while still producing something that is compulsive and entertaining. And I think that that's, like, that I really love writing in the genre for that reason, because I feel like it gives me this freedom to, like, write something that is, like, ooh, like, that's, like, you know, an issue that I am interested in, or a certain type of person that I'm interested in, or a situation that I'm interested in, while also making it, like, twisty and shocking and, you know, getting all those, like, it's like, you know, writing thrills is actually quite fun for a writer. So it's kind of the best of both worlds for that genre for me.
Noveler is the best way to write a novel. Why? Quite simply because we've made it the easiest place to do it. Writing a novel is hard enough. Noveler takes care of all the logistical bits of writing a novel, just leaving that small matter of the words to you. It's a clean, beautiful writing interface with writing analytics, goals and streaks, advanced grammar checking, version control, day, evening, and night modes, and many other features designed to take all the stress out of writing. Tell us what you need and we'll build it. Together, we'll build a better tool. With a design-led approach, all the right tools that you need, Noveler saves all your words constantly, allows you to manage and order your novel easily. It's accessible from any device, desktop or mobile. It syncs to Google Drive and Dropbox. It allows exports in various formats, including ebook and more. It also has nice touches like allowing you to write both offline and online, unique for a web-based platform. Everyone needs help with their writing from inspiration through to grammar checking, so we're doing our best to provide that support. We integrate that support directly into Noveler. Our advanced grammar checker powered by Pro Writing Aid does everything from spell check to style advice. Our writing courses include the incredible Tim Clare's Couch to ADK. We're really excited to offer all Author Stories listeners 30% off Noveler for a whole year. And it doesn't matter if you choose to sign up for the monthly or annual plan, you'll get 30% off. All you need to do is use the discount code Hank when you sign up. Noveler, N-O-V-L-R. That's noveler.org. After Free Fall, you started working on Don't Turn Around at some point in the process of publishing Free Fall. And where Free Fall feels very big and expansive, Don't Turn Around almost feels claustrophobic at points. And I have a feeling that some of that is on purpose. Where did the idea for Don't Turn Around come from? And did it begin with the characters? You know, was it Kate and Rebecca that came first? Was it an idea of kind of this hunting expedition, in a way? Or what was the first idea that came to you?
It was one of the first things that sort of sparked it was being back here in the States and driving again, because in London I didn't have a car, which was, you know, for everyone's personal safety, for the best, because I could still can't figure out the left side of the road thing. But you know, here we're in a place where, you know, having a car is non-essential but really helpful, and my parents live a couple of hours away, so you know, to be able to get back and forth to them, I needed a car. So for the first time since I was really like a teenager, I found myself behind the wheel again. And I was really excited about it at first. And then I got behind the wheel and realized that actually, like, I'm kind of scared of it now. And I think that comes, you know, sort of from age, where you're suddenly more aware of your own mortality. But I realized that actually, like, there is a sort of false sense of security that we have in our cars, where we feel like we're in this like safe bubble and, you know, everybody's obeying the rules and, you know, there's, you know, very clear lines that we're meant to stay in. But really all it takes is one person to disregard those rules or to decide that they want to screw up that system to cause complete chaos. So I think like that idea of that kind of like fear of the road sort of was one of the sparks. And then another was that I read about these incredible charities that are popping up around the US, because access to abortion clinics is increasingly scarce in some places. And so there are these charities that have popped up to give women who are seeking to have abortions transportation and lodging if they can't provide those things for themselves, because in some places you have to drive hundreds of miles to get to the nearest clinic. And that idea of being in a position where you are seeking that procedure, where you're in a very vulnerable state maybe, and it's a very personal thing that you're going through, and having to rely on a stranger to help you with that, having to rely on a stranger to drive you there and to wait for you and to drive you home, I just was completely fascinated by what that dynamic would be. What is the dynamic in that car? And how are these two people relating to each other? And then from there, I was like, okay, like, well, what if one of them has a not so great motive? What if they are working through their own stuff? What if somebody has secrets? And so then it became kind of like layering on all of the elements of danger, both inside the car and outside the car. And that kind of created, you're right, like this sense of real claustrophobia. And writing it was, I think, because I'd gone from Freefall, where so much of it is very like action based, where, you know, she's kind of moving through these expanses of space in the Rockies, to suddenly being trapped in a car was like a real challenge, actually, like writing that and realizing that, you know, they're going, or it's the middle of the night, they're in the desert, there's not a lot that they're looking out of the window and seeing, you know, the inside of the car isn't changing. So trying to make sure that like that was, that built atmosphere and didn't become tedious was tricky. It was a tricky proposition.
So what are things that you focus on? Oh, I'm hearing myself. What things do you focus on when you're changing from this kind of expansive story to a story like this that really drills down on the character and character motives and this interpersonal relationship that really is the center of this book? As a writer, how do you kind of condense down to where the story is?
For me, it was making sure that I got the voices of the two characters as right as I could. So, and actually knowing as much about them as I could. So for both Kate and Rebecca, I wrote a lot of background about them. I wrote a lot of background scenes actually about them that never made it into the book. Because I think that you need, like, I realized that I need to know them as much as I can, so that I will be able to understand how they react when they're placed in that situation and how they'll talk to each other. And that was the hardest part, was knowing each of the characters separately and then putting them in the car and trying to figure out how they would start to talk and how they would start to bond. And really that was like the work of, there's a lot of stuff that was left on the cutting room floor that ultimately helped me know them well enough to hopefully be able to do it, you know, successfully.
You talk about these kind of big themes that you want to explore and want to really dig into with the characters. But when you read the book, it doesn't feel like Jessica's preaching at us and giving us her her side of this issue, or, you know, why this is important to you or whatever. It feels like I'm reading a story. How do you balance that, having I don't want to say agenda, that's the wrong word, having this thing that you want to discuss and the merits or demerits of it or you know, what, wherever you come down on the issue, and how this issue affects people, and finding a story in that. How do you balance putting people off by the thing you want to talk about with giving them an entertaining experience that they also might open up to the possibilities of?
I think it goes back to just making sure that when you're writing, when I'm writing, I'm like always like, okay, is the reader actually going to want to, are they going to be interested in this? And are they going to be entertained by this? And I would never want to write something that came across as like preachy or as like a quote unquote like issues book, because those, I mean, they're great examples, but I don't feel like that's not something that I think of. That's not something that I want to write. I want to write something that's entertaining, and I want to write something that is interesting and that will make people think, but that won't make them feel like they've just sat down to like a long lecture. And I think that the key to that is empathy, and is relying on your characters to to tell the story. So I think that if you as a writer are like, I have these things that I want to talk about, I'm going to talk about them, that's not going to end up being a very interesting story, because it's just you as the writer lecturing to your readers. If you think to yourself, I have a situation that I would like to place people in and to see what happens, and then you let your, and you know your characters well enough, and you let that situation spool out in a naturally, then I think that you get to that place where it doesn't feel like, oh, the author has like some stuff that they wanted to preach about, or, you know, they have some axe to grind. It is instead like, oh, okay, that's like an entertaining and interesting and hopefully realistic portrayal of what happens when these particular people are placed in this particular situation. And I think that like, that's what was great about the fact that it was like you were stuck in a car, was that it becomes like a pressure cooker. And there's this, so there are all these things that are compressing the story. So it's compressed in space because it's just two people in a car. And it's also compressed in time because they know that they're on a clock. And so those things naturally bring propulsion to the story to make it so that it becomes more about plot than it becomes about like an issue.
So tell people, give them kind of the elevator pitch, because we've got this story with these two people in a car at night, and we have the tensions that come from two people not wanting to let the other in, so to speak, and to hide certain things and, you know, the way people do. But there's an outside force that comes into the story. Tell us about that.
Yes. So these two women are in the car, and you as the reader don't know what they're doing in the car or where they're going. All you know is that both of them seem extremely tense, and they clearly don't know each other and are sort of being very cagey. And then out of the darkness comes this pair of headlights, and it's a truck, and the truck nearly runs them off the road. It like comes very, very close to the bumper. There's this sort of skirmish. They end up going into the hard shoulder, and then the truck drives away. And so the women at first think that maybe it's just like a teenage prank. Maybe, you know, they're in the middle of nowhere. Maybe it's just some people who are bored. Maybe it's just a jerk who decided that it would be fun to harass, you know, some stranger. But then as the night goes on, the truck reappears. And the truck becomes this sort of relentless pursuer. And because it's nighttime and because of the glare of the headlights, they can't see inside the truck. So they don't know who is behind the wheel. And the question of who's behind the wheel and why whoever is driving the truck seems so intent on killing them, really. Like, it's the attacks that are happening to them are very deliberate and are very brutal, is the thing that sparks them to start digging through their own personal history to figure out who might want to cause them harm. And what I think is interesting is that as a woman, so much of our lives are spent sort of dealing with this constant low-level sense of fear. You know, I think that I don't remember the moment when I learned that if I'm crossing a parking lot at night, I need to, you know, make sure I have my keys between my fingers. Or if I'm walking down a street, then I need to make sure that my headphones are out so I can hear if somebody's behind me. But that is a very universal experience for women. And I think that there is a strangeness about female experience, which is like, we sort of live in a state where violence feels like inevitable and also this sort of invisible, you know, where it's like it could be anywhere and it could come for me at any time. And that's really what I wanted to dig into with Don't Turn Around, is the fact that like these women aren't like, oh, of course it's that person who wants to kill me. really, it could be anybody. And that pervasiveness is actually really terrifying to live with. And that's the thing that I wanted to get to. That's the truck. The truck is like the thing that is lurking for you in the darkness that you can't see, but that you know is coming for you.
Excuse me. The new book is called Don't Turn Around. Jessica, this book is a must read for all thriller readers. You know, from Free Fall and the tone of that book to the tone of Don't Turn Around, this is really a kind of a tour de force of writing thrillers and being able to firmly plant your feet in one area and then turn around and do this. You know, this is what people ought to study, you know, in writing these two.
Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to put links to the new book, and we'll put a link to Free Fall in there as well, where people can look those up. But tell people where they can find you online. I know you recently changed your Twitter handle. Where else can they connect with you online?
So I am on Twitter. I am not a good tweeter. I just don't. I'm like not like a witty one-liner kind of person as much as I would like to be. So they can find me on Twitter. I'm just not super active on there. I'm more active on Instagram. And my Instagram handle is JessicaBerry9, the number 9, because I guess that there are 8 Jessica Berries that got there before me, so I'm on 9. And there you can find, you know, I do some book reviews. I post a lot of pictures of my cats. And I always love to hear from readers. It's actually like the Bookstagram community I really love. I feel like they're a really great, smart, supportive bunch of people. So yeah, if you're on there, please do look me up. I'd love to hear from you.
Well, Instagram tends to be less of a dumpster fire than Twitter can be. For sure. Jessica, thank you so much for coming back on the show. We're going to send everyone to pick up their copy of Don't Turn Around. And be sure to join us next year. Let's do this again.
I'd love that. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real treat.
Want to grow as a writer and take your writing to the next level? Give Pro Writing Aid a try. Pro Writing Aid is a grammar checker, style editor, and writing mentor in one package. Pro Writing Aid will never replace a human editor. Rather, it helps you self-edit to a deeper level so that when you send it off to an editor, they will be able to focus on the meat of your writing and not spend their time fixing basic writing issues. Pro Writing Aid is the only platform that offers world-class grammar and style checking, combined with more in-depth reports to help you strengthen your writing. Our unique combination of suggestions, articles, videos, and quizzes makes writing fun and interactive. Writing can be grammatically perfect, but still feel awkward and clumsy. Pro Writing Aid searches out elements like repetitiveness, vague wording, sentence length variation, over-dependence on adverbs, passive voice, over-complicated sentence structures, and so much more. Nothing makes a writer lose credibility faster than spelling and grammar mistakes. Submit clean, error-free writing. Go to ProWritingAid.com and use code HANK20 for 20% off of Pro Writing Aid Premium. Pro Writing Aid. Check it out today.